The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donal Kavanagh on the programme this morning. Greg and the team very shortly hitting the road for Kilkenny. We'll tell you more about that as the show goes on. But it's me here for the next 3 hours until noon, as the name of the show would suggest. We have our Friday panel just coming up. We'll introduce you to those in just a moment. Lots of other stuff to do as well on the programme this morning, including our legal advice with Solicitor Seamus Gunn, always a popular spot on the programme. But as we always say, at the centre of this programme are your views, your perspectives and your take on the issues of the day, or indeed the issues you want to see raised. You can make contact with the programme on 086 60 25000 with text or WhatsApp messages. You can call us, of course, 074 91 25000 and stick the 0035374 prefix before the 91 25000 if you're outside of the dialing area. We're on social media, of course, at Highland Radio on X, Highland Hub on Facebook, and various other social media platforms as well. You can, of course, watch the programme. Our participants in the Friday panel are all on Zoom. You can watch that conversation on your smart TV, on YouTube, on Highland Radio Ireland, and indeed on Facebook as well. And you can, of course, interact through those platforms too. So without further ado, let's introduce you to our Friday panel, and a very good morning to all of them. We're joined by Leonard Watson, the owner of Watson's Menswear in Letterkenny and a very senior figure within Chamber in Letterkenny. Leonard, good morning.
Good morning.
Councillor Declan Meehan, independent councillor in the Letterkenny Milford Municipal District with a particular interest, of course, in the Milford electoral area. That's Declan, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Brendan Byrne, who is CEO of the Irish Fish Processors and Exporters and, of course, a former member and Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council as well. Brendan, great to talk to you as always.
Good morning, Donal.
We're going to start our discussion this morning, I suppose, with what is the pressing international headline at the moment, and that's the boarding of the vessels on the Gaza flotilla by Israeli naval forces in international waters. And a lot of people asking the question, what should Ireland's response be to what is, in effect, a flagrant abuse of international maritime law? Brendan, as a man who's lived by the sea and is working with fish processors and exporters and has the marine in his blood, what's your take on this whole issue?
Well, the boarding of any vessel in international waters by any navy of any country is totally illegal. And what was done to the flotilla, I think one vessel, to be fair and balanced, was in the waters of Gaza, whereas the others were international waters. So the boarding of them and indeed the seizing of the vessel and the arresting of the people therein is a totally illegal act on the part of Israel. But that won't surprise any or shock any of your listeners today, because everything Israel has done in the last period in Gaza or in the Golan Heights or in the West Bank, which they've done for the last 30 to 40 years, has been illegal in international law. But yet we do not have a United Nations that functions. Different governments throughout the world have condemned that act. The Irish government did yesterday. But until such time as we have real pressure, now we have a lot of international countries condemning Israel, but the main supporter of Israel remains the United States of America. And they're supplying them with weapons to murder in genocide fashion an innocent, unarmed people. And they've done that for the last 3 years.
You did mention the UN there, and one of the issues with the UN obviously is going to be if other countries, Ireland included, try to bring up any sort of resolution targeting Israel, what will inevitably happen is it'll be vetoed by the US. And the same will hold, for instance, if you try to do something against Russia or China, one of the others will veto that. So you have almost a situation of permanent stalemate on the UN, where whatever action you try to take, one of the big countries will be there to actually stymie it and cut it off at the pass, as it were.
The United Nations has become the League of Nations, which are completely eunuch in approach. They're powerless. And I think they've got worse, actually. And this is the real problem. Now, I know Ireland has the Occupied Territories Bill sitting on our statute book since 2018. That won't make a blind bit of difference to where we are here. So what Ireland does, in line with Spain, which has led out with this in terms of the EU countries, we just continue to condemn it. You can't send it to the United Nations because, as you correctly state, it'll be vetoed. So we just have to keep at it. The one encouraging thing I thought about the flotilla this time around, the first time there was a flotilla, I think there was 2 to 3 vessels. This time there was 46. Please God, the next time there's a flotilla, there'll be 500 or 600, and they can't all be stopped. And you'll break the blockade. That is the only way it'll be done eventually.
Councillor Declan Meehan, I know you take an interest on this issue. What's your take on what's happened over the past 48 hours?
Yeah, look, I suppose Brendan has stated it very clearly and correctly that any country which boards a ship in international waters is acting illegally. And look at Israel as a state has been acting illegally under international law since its foundation in the 40s and has been acting with impunity since then as well, because it has been allowed to do so primarily by the United States of America, but also by some of the countries in Europe, both inside and outside the European Union. Donald, you rightly say that, you know, the UN is not really going to be an effective arbiter or an enforcer here when it comes to holding Israel to account. And so the Irish state has to do everything within its power to influence policy at a European level, but it also must enact the Occupied Territories Bill. And we've heard some kind of, I suppose, comments about or questioning the effectiveness of such a move. But what I would counter that with is, if it's such an ineffective move for Ireland to carry forward, then why is Israel resisting it so much? And the reason for that is that since Ireland has seriously started talking about enacting the Occupied Territories Bill, you have 8 other European countries within the EU talking about doing likewise. And that has pushed the dial at a European Commission level, particularly with the Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, about actually breaking and suspending the trade agreement that's currently in place. So it's a very effective piece of legislation, not because of the amount of trade that Ireland is doing with Israel through the occupied territories, but actually about the influence that that has. And Israel understands that, which is why they have launched an international campaign, particularly through the United States, but also through the European Union, about trying to dissuade Ireland from doing just that. One of the things that I'm very concerned about, Donal, is this government of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the various independents hemming and hawing about actually passing that legislation. As Brendan said, it has been on the books since Senator Francis Black brought it in 2018 through the Senate. And we were promised last year by both the leaders of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael that this would be passed. It has gone through legislative scrutiny through the Houses of the Oireachtas. The recommendation from the Foreign Affairs Committee was that that legislation should include both services and goods, even though the draft legislation released by the government only said services. And yet we still see this hemming and hawing about it and a reluctance to actually pass it. The government of Ireland should have absolutely nothing left in its arsenal when it comes to tackling Israel in whatever small or large way that it can. And yet there are things still left in the government's arsenal, and the Occupied Territories Bill is a key component of that.
I want to go to you, Leonard Watson, because obviously you're a man who understands business, and as Declan indicated, there are goods and there are services. The government is focusing on the issue of goods, and Simon Harris, the Taoiseach, and others were questioning, well, can we bring services into this, and will that have an impact? As someone who's involved in trade, involved in commerce, involved in business at the coalface, I mean, services and trade, really, if services aren't included in the Occupied Territories Bill, it's going to be effectively ineffective.
Yeah, no, but, you know, still the elephant in the room is Trump too. Like, you know, it's sad to say that we're, as a world, we're relying on Trump maybe to finish this war. I do think Netanyahu fears him. But I would fear too. I know about the Occupied Territories Bill and that there, but unless it's a united European bill, I would fear that Trump would take it out in Ireland. You know, he's a rogue. You just don't know what he, you know, on a given day, he could turn around and punish Ireland for being the first country to go. I would love to see a united Europe do it. I think, you know, you're looking at a regime in Israel that has no moral compass. Like, you know, the law just does not mean anything to them. Like, but the whole trade thing is, I would love to see the whole of Europe just stop trading with Israel. Yeah. Like, and it does seem to be the only thing that will probably hurt them. Like, because nothing else with America behind them, nothing else seems to hurt them. Like, you know, they're just. But I do think now, if this new plan that Trump has come up with, if Hamas would just go with it now, you could see an end of the war fairly quickly.
Part of the problem with Trump, though, is Trump will say black at 11 o'clock in the morning. He'll say white at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And by 7 o'clock at night, he'll deny he said anything. But this new deal, I'll stay with Leonard on this one, because this deal that Trump is proposing, is anyone going to take this seriously in the Arab world when he has himself at the head and Tony Blair by his side, given Tony Blair's record on weapons of mass destruction back in the day?
Don't add you up to your point, but sometimes you have to give the elephant in the room the top table. He's got an ego, and you know what? Sometimes you have to massage that ego. And if you do put him at the top of the table, he will want to get this done. If he's leading this out, he'll want to get this done. And the Arab nations seem to be kind of behind it anyway. But something has to be done. At the end of the day, there's children being murdered every day. This war has to stop. And we have to rebuild Palestine too. And there has to be the two-state solution. Should it be Trump at the top? Who cares? As long as this stops.
Do you have any faith, Brendan Byrne, that Donald Trump's latest initiative can gain some traction and actually be effective?
No, because there's too little detail in the plan. There's no deadlines, there's no commitments. I think it was a put-together plan just to take some of the international pressure that was growing on the American administration for the famine that we see in Gaza, the amount of death that is in Gaza, and the sheer brutality of the Israeli forces in continuing going into Gaza City. I think I don't think it's a genuine plan at all, to be fair. I would be very worried when he self-appointed himself to lead it. His plan a year ago was to make a holiday resort out of Gaza. So we need to be realistic here. But I think the European Union, who in fairness didn't show much leadership in terms of Gaza, particularly Ursula von der Leyen, the fact that she is now coming in stronger on the side of the Palestinian people is encouraging. Now, we have talked about the Occupied Territories Bill of 2018. I think for Ireland to go alone in adopting that would be a 24-hour cycle. That's all it would. We have to bring other EU states with us. And the fact that Ursula von der Leyen has done an about turn and other states are now gravitating towards very severe trade measures against Israel is where we need to go. And we should use the fact that we have this bill on our statute book to be adopted as a lever in going to that space where we have at least 8, 10 or 15 of the 27 countries to put sanctions on Israel. Now, sanctions on Israel won't make a blind bit of difference because they have international access to the greatest cash reserves known to mankind in the world through the Jewish banking system. But it's a start. But it's public opinion and shedding a light. There is famine. There is a famine in Gaza caused by an army of occupation. The last time we've heard of that was in 1900 in South Africa with the British Army and the Boers. That's how far back in time and in history we've gone with the savage approach of Israel.
Declan, I want to give the final word to you on this issue before we go to a break. I mean, certainly from what Brendan is saying, he doesn't hold out much hope for this Trump deal. Leonard is saying give it a chance. What's your take on this? Is it true what both Leonard and Brendan seem to agree that Ireland working on its own is not going to be effective here? It's going to take the whole of Europe and even more international pressure here.
Well, I think, first of all, in terms of this so-called peace deal, this Trump-led deal, I think it's absolutely ludicrous. And I think it insults all of our intelligence to even have it put on the table. A deal which does not involve Palestinians is one which is destined to fail. I think that regardless of whether the Arab countries are, the mood music is good there or not, an awful lot of these Arab countries are dictatorships. They're not democracies. They're more interested in money and normalizing relations with Israel, as we've seen from the last Trump administration. That was the carrot for them to normalize relations with Israel. So I'd be very skeptical of their support of it. I think when you look at the scant detail that we do have around this deal, the language of corporate America is very much to the fore. They talk about boards, directors, chairpersons, etc. It's absolutely ludicrous to have have someone like Tony Blair or indeed President Trump at the head of any of this. There's no credibility to this whatsoever. In terms of Ireland acting alone, I think that, look, at the Occupied Territories Bill, I believe, is something that is incredibly important to pass. As I say, I don't believe that anything should be left in the tank on behalf of the Irish state. And I think that in doing so, we will actually set a precedent like we did previously with South Africa during apartheid. And I believe that it is having effect currently. And I believe that there is strength in numbers. The issue that we have, we talk about, and you've mentioned it, Donal, and we've all mentioned it, around the United Nations basically being impotent because of the fact of the American veto when it comes to Israel. The difficulty that we have within the European Union is we have to contend with Germany, and Germany are currently selling arms to Israel as well. They're the second biggest exporter of arms to Israel, and they are, you know, supporting Israel in this genocide. So that is something that we have to contend with at a European level, and so we have to act on our own initially to build pressure within the European Union, which is currently working, but we need to get it over the line.
Certainly food for thought there. I can tell you, by the way, that in our second hour we're going to have Seamus Gunn with the legal spot, and Seamus is going to speak a little bit more about the whole legal implications of the Israeli actions and the legality regarding maritime law. So we're going to have a chat about that with Seamus in the second hour. I'm going to take a break at this point. When we come back, I want to talk about an issue that was discussed on the programme yesterday, raised by Councillor Micheál Colm-McGill-Osbach, and that's sustainable tourism and how to ensure that models of tourism within local communities benefit rather than hamper those communities. We'll hit that topic after this break. Welcome back to the 9 till Noon Show, and welcome back to our Friday panel. We are joined on the show this morning by Leonard Watson, owner of Watson's Menswear in Letterkenny, by Councillor Declan Meehan, independent member of Donegal County Council representing the Letterkenny Milford Municipal District, and Brendan Byrne, who is a former member and Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council and indeed CEO of the Irish Fish Producers and Exporters Association. As I indicated before the break, I want to talk about tourism here for a bit, because there was a very interesting discussion on the programme yesterday, and it was raised by Councillor Micheál Cullum. They're having a special workshop in the Glenties Municipal District. I suspect this is one that could be picked up in other areas as well. And the question basically is sustainable tourism. How do we ensure that models of tourism within local communities are advantaging and supporting rather than the opposite in those communities? I want to go to you first, Leonard. Obviously, the Chamber in Letterkenny takes a very keen interest in tourism as well and liaises regularly with the council, tourism authorities and others on this. How important is it that when a tourism initiative is announced, it does raise all boats and the whole community benefits?
We're a county that relies a lot on tourism, you know, with the Wild Atlantic Way, but it has to be sustainable. You know what? There has to be a balance. And enjoy, even there, looking over the last while, you know, we have a property shortage in Donegal, and you look at the prices of properties. You look at property comes on the market now in Downings or Carrigart or something. It's astronomical, the price. Like, so how does the local person that wants to stay in their community, you know, to their family in the community, they can't compete, like. And then the problem is then we have a booming economy during the summer months yet, but then in the winter months, some of these businesses are closing down. There's not the population there to keep them going. So again, sometimes it's a false economy. Look, it looks great during the summer and the places are booming. I've been around places like Dunfanaghy and that there during the summer, absolutely booming, and it's great to see. But the problem is it sustainable then during the winter months? You know, you're looking at them, people having to go further afield for employment, businesses closing down. And it just doesn't give a right feel into a community. Like, you know, it's kind of from darkness to light nearly. That's kind of, you have so much going on and then you have nothing going on. So it has to be sustainable. Like, you know, towns like Letterkenny, that we have enough going on that, you know, tourism, the more tourists come in, the better. But we still have a sustainable business community after the tourists are away. Like, it's but the smaller areas that...
The argument is, though, that one of your problems in the smaller areas like Dunfanaghy is that property in the area, the price of property and the structure of the property market is such that it's all holiday homes, it's all Airbnbs, yeah, it's all short-term lets. And even if someone is raised in Dunfanaghy and wants to live in Dunfanaghy, the reality is they can't because they're priced out of the market. And that's why when all the holidaymakers are gone, the place appears to be dead.
Yeah.
Is that the case? Or are we taking Airbnb and short-term lets and sort of making them the big bad wolf on which we're going to hang the blame for everything?
Well, Joe, there's two things here, don't we? Like, we have a property shortage. We're not building enough homes in the county. And that's all over the county. That's Letterkenny. That is places like Carrigart, Downings. And the problem there now is the price has rocketed everywhere. Like, rents have rocketed. Like, and now with Airbnbs, you know, they are taking so much property out of the market for the person that wants to maybe rent a home, or, you know, rare a family in them areas. So it's just, I don't know, it's like a vicious circle. Like, we need to build more property. That's the elephant. We definitely need to build more homes. And, you know, it's to balance holiday homes, but homes for people to live and rare families and stay in their communities. Like,
Brendan, you're based in one of the most beautiful and scenic areas of Donegal, with some of the biggest attractions in the county almost on your doorstep. In terms of this whole issue of sustainable tourism, do you feel within your community that they've found the right balance, that sustainable tourism is a feature in Southwest Donegal?
Well, I think in terms of the question, we're conflating two very key issues that are facing us as a society. The property shortage, as Leonard has highlighted, and the need to develop tourism. If we're to develop rural Ireland, one of the key drivers of that will be tourism. And if you compare and contrast Donegal with Kerry, Cork, even Clare, we're grossly underdeveloped. So I think we need to be careful with our language here. Tourism that we've developed here in Southwest Donegal with Steve Leag and Glenn Columkill and Killy Beggs as a maritime tourism venue has been sustainably developed with regard to the environment. But let's not conflate sustainability and sustainable tourism with a housing shortage. And I think if we go down that road, we're sending out the wrong signals. So we need to decouple this and be reasonable in our argument and our approach. Donegal, as a tourism destination, has more to offer than the rest of Ireland put together, but it is very much underdeveloped. And what we should be discussing here today is how we develop further in the Downings or in Gweedore, anywhere around the county, to, you know, to build it to the level that Kerry has for the last century. That's the key driver that we need to be doing if we're focused on the economic well-being of Donegal and its people.
Is this the case then? Should members of Donegal County Council and others then actually go to Kerry, sit down with their compatriots, be it at a Lama meeting or be it on the fringes of another meeting, and actually have the conversation and say, what are you doing that we're not doing?
Well, they have had the advantage of doing exactly what they are doing for the last 100 years. We're late into the game. And to try to link future tourism development with sustainable tourism a la vis the housing crisis that we have, I think we're going to go backwards if we start linking that. I think there's no economic argument or economic theory or thought process I could justify even debating that. We need to decouple these two things. Yeah. And we need to be investing heavily in tourism. Tourism can be the greatest job creator in Donegal, and Leonard is right. We should be developing and lengthening the season. There's a lot to offer here in the winter as well as their summer.
Yeah.
But we need to be careful with our language here.
Do you think then briefly that it's a mistake to say that a property that isn't being offered for B&B will automatically become a rental property in which a local person can live?
Well, look, markets find their own level. That's the basic principle of economics. Now, we're not going to rewrite the economic theories of all those scholars that have gone before us. And I travel a lot because of the fishing. It's amazing the amount of times I actually stay in an Airbnb when I go to Brussels. And if we're going to try to say in Donegal or in the west of Ireland, we're going to curtail or restrict Airbnbs and that'll add to the sustainability aspect of our housing crisis, then that's the wrong message to send out. Now, I haven't had the advantage of hearing what the councillor said, so I'm debating here at a disadvantage, but I'm debating this on the macro theory of let market forces dictate and don't conflate two key issues. One is the need to tourism develop, and two, the need to provide housing, which is a separate issue.
Councillor Declan Meehan, the rest of us can theorise and postulate about what Donegal County Council should or shouldn't do. You're in the position where you'll be the ones who are doing it. What say you?
Firstly, I just want to welcome, Councillor Michaela Aspig's contribution to this yesterday. And the workshop that he's called for in the Glenties MD, I think, is a timely one. And it's one that I've sought off the back of his proposal for the Letterkenny Milford MD as well. And I suppose I agree and disagree with Brendan there, right? I do think that there's two issues that we have to discuss here. We have to discuss greater supports for tourism, right? But we also And I think it's impossible to divorce the two from the housing crisis. And here's why. If you talk to anyone in Downings or in Rathmullen who are from those villages, just two villages as examples, the people who are my age and younger are finding it increasingly impossible to purchase or to build, to even buy a site in those communities, because they are getting priced out by their own success as tourist destinations. And that's the reality. And that's what we have here. Where you have, and it's the same all over the country, but I think it's felt more acutely in rural communities, particularly, or when compared to larger towns. And that is the reality that people are faced with, is being priced out of the market, because when a house goes up, you're not competing with other local people. You're competing with often an international market who want a piece of land in one of the most beautiful parts of the world, which is the Milford electoral area, of course. So that is, we can't really divorce the two. What I think that we need to do in terms of the housing issue is, and I think, again, this is acutely felt in rural communities, but also Gaeltacht communities, where people who are being priced out of the market, we need to have state intervention where more social housing has been built. There's currently no social housing planned in any of our Gaeltacht communities in the Milford electoral area, as an example. And that's something that I am pushing for and pushing for hard. But the other thing that we need to do is we need to introduce specific targeted schemes for these holiday destination type villages, where affordable home schemes can allow people who are local to stay within their own communities. That is a mechanism that's available to the government that should be leveraged to ensure the growth and vibrancy of local people living in these beautiful rural communities. The second part then around the sustainability of tourism. Tourism is fantastic. It's a fantastic economic driver. There's an awful lot of people who are dependent on it. There's an awful lot of us who also enjoy it as well as benefit from it. We need to invest in our infrastructure. It is a fact that only 12% of visitors to the island of Ireland come north of the Dublin-Galway line. A huge part of that is not because we don't have as good an offering, it's because we don't have basic things like roads and rail. It's not as easy to get to Donegal from Galway or Dublin as it is to get to Kerry. That's a huge issue. The other thing is we need to invest in our off-season and our shoulder season. And one thing that I raised during budget negotiations last year, unsuccessfully, I might add, in Donegal County Council, and this is really a departmental issue in Dublin, is that we're giving out just under €50,000 to festivals in Donegal, just under €50,000 through the County Council. That's a pitiful amount of money. And what we need is we need to be investing much more into communities. When you think of all the community and voluntary festivals, the length and breadth of Donegal, the huge economic boost that gives to those communities. You know, we think of any of them, they're hugely successful. They take an awful lot of work and they take an awful lot of money. We should have targeted schemes with much more money available for the off-season and the shoulder season to extend that season. An awful lot of our hotels, our pubs and our restaurants are near empty over the winter, apart from the busy Christmas season. So there's a lot more that we can be doing, both to help the tourism sector, but also to help local people and tourism destinations to get a home in their own community.
Leonard, as someone who's been involved in organising events and festivals around Letterkenny with your chamber hat on, I'm sure what Declan just said is something that resonates very much with you.
Yeah, Joe, Declan's right in that there. Like, I didn't actually notice that smaller figure, Declan, 50,000. We run the St. Patrick's Day parade, and I know it's not a festival, but it's still a big event. We get no funding towards it at all. And then I would hear what Derry City get towards their Christmas lights or their fireworks. It's astronomical. Like, what they get towards their Christmas lights every year is multiples of that budget there, Declan. So it is something that we're not investing enough in. And Declan's right. If, you know, these events being run through the winter or, you know, different events, it would keep people about. It would bring visitors. It would make the whole thing sustainable. But Declan's right too. We're not building enough houses. You know, I know at the moment now there's a couple of big sites that's going to start in Letterkenny. But it's around the county. It's in them smaller areas. We need to be building homes that'll let people stay in their area. And so if they have to travel maybe half an hour for work or that, but they can stay in their area and keep these areas sustainable. and keep the areas going. Like, so, but again, Declan, 50,000 is absolute madness. I couldn't believe that.
I want to raise a quick issue. We've had a query come in from someone, and I'll just go to each of the panel briefly, if I may. Quarter says, good morning. What are your guests' views on Glenveagh Castle tours being closed on 2 days a week? And that's an issue we've had discussed on a number of occasions over the past couple of months. I'll go to you first, if I may, Councillor Declan Meehan. Glenveagh closed 2 days a week. Is that 2 days of lost opportunity?
Yeah, of course it is. It's absolutely 2 days of lost opportunity. I think that we have had issues with the OPW managing some of our fantastic sites across Donegal over recent years, whether that was in Newmills, in Glenveagh, in Glebe. And it's not to ever to undervalue the fantastic work that our OPW managers and OPW staff are doing in those locations. They're fantastic stewards of those fantastic assets and amenities, and they're fantastic tour guides. I mean, any visit to an OPW property is a fantastic experience. But they need the resources to be able to fully leverage those fantastic destinations to be open to the public and to bring visitors into the area. And it's not just about visitors to Donegal, it's also about local people valuing what they have on their doorstep. So OPW funding and OPW resources of places like Glenveagh and other OPW properties, it's really, really important, and it's something that needs to be addressed. I mean, we can't talk about sustainable tourism if we're not going to also address the systemic underfunding that exists from Dublin into Donegal amenities. We really need to see more money put into it. We need to see every support possible given for our OPW properties and all tourism sector to have a fighting chance in a very, very competitive market across Ireland.
Brendan Byrne, whenever tourism facilities in Donegal are mentioned, Sleaf League obviously is up at the top, but Glenveagh Castle is always inevitably up toward the top as well. I mean, Glenveagh closed 2 days a week. Your thoughts?
Well, my initial thought was that was Muckers House in Killarney. Do you think it would be closed for 2 days a week? Not at all. It's about prioritising, and this is back to the argument that I was having. Let's not conflate, over confuse the thing. We have two separate issues, but for it to be closed for 2 days is nonsensical.
Leonard Watson?
Yeah, Joe, I agree with the two boys. That's just purely financial. This is down to the OPW not getting enough money. As Declan said, this would not be happening down the country. And certainly, you know, this is probably one of the key destinations within Donegal, and we're closing it down 2 days a week, which is absolute madness.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have a discussion about Snapchat and the fact that very soon, if you want to preserve your memories on Snapchat, you're going to have to pay. Just a few of your comments before we go further. Great discussion caller says, same as the car tax office. This is referencing the Glenveagh opening hours. The car tax office now only open 2 days and at certain times. The recycling centre in Carn as well. These issues need to be looked at. When will all these virtue signalers move on from Ukraine and Gaza and focus on the less fashionable conflicts throughout the globe? Sudan, Nigeria, where 55,000 Christians have been killed, hundreds of thousands forced from their homes and 1,800 churches burned by Islamic terrorists. Strange why they haven't jumped on that bandwagon, says a listener. Weapons still going through Shannon and Irish airspace. Government have done nothing about it. That makes Micheál Martin and Simon Harris complicit. Another caller said, good morning. What we need to remember is that Palestine was the aggressor in this war. They started it. They're now crying that they're losing the flotilla. What the flotilla was doing was an illegal act. There is a blockade. Is it illegal to have a blockade in international waters? We'll raise that issue with Seamus Gunn, as I said, in the second hour of the programme. What the hell were those people doing there? Asks the caller. It's such a stupid stunt. Why do these people not sort out our government first? The Irish state should mind its own business. They'd be better off trying to sort out other countries than sorting out our own. This government is a complete and utter joke. Why is the UN not in Palestine in a peacekeeping force? UN soldiers have prevented genocide around the world. As we said, a large part of the issue there is the fact that any attempt at UN level to get peacekeepers into Gaza, I suspect, would be blocked by the US. And everything Israel has done to date has been illegal. They will continue to do so as long as Europe continues to trade with them. We're now beginning to see a backlash, and this will soon be impossible to stop. OK, let's go back to the panel members and an issue that's been discussed over the course of this week. Now, I'm going to be honest and upfront. This is of no consequence whatsoever to me. I do not do Snapchat. I do Facebook, and Facebook is pretty much the only social media I do, to be honest. But Snapchat have announced they're now going to charge for storage. So if you have put messages and stuff up on Snapchat and you want to keep it, you're going to have to pay from now on. And it got me wondering, are we now over-reliant on social media, effectively, to preserve our memories? There was a time when we would all have photo albums on a shelf and we'd pick the albums down and look at them and, you know, then we'd put the book back on the shelf and we always knew where it was. Now it seems an awful lot of us are keeping our pictures digitally in the cloud and running the risk of potentially losing them in the case of any form of digital disaster. Leonard, in terms of Snapchat, I don't know if you're on it or not, because I'm not, so I can't say who is or isn't. But from the point of view of Snapchat charging to preserve your photograph and preserve your memories, are we relying too much on this now?
Well, I'm going to answer the questions. You said, somebody asked me one time, are you on Snapchat? I said, no, I'm 50.
Well, I'm 61, so obviously.
You know what, Donald, this is just something doesn't bother me. I like my daughter's on Snapchat, and I was chatting to her last night. But Donald, you're right. We used to take pictures at one time of special occasions, and as you say, you kept an album out there. Now we're taking pictures of everything, like, you know, and you sit on the cafe that and you look around, you see kids and they're taking all these selfies and pouting and all this here. Like, and I'd say if they actually looked into the albums, there's probably more pictures of nothing than anything. Again, doesn't care to be that. Let them charge whatever they want. I think if it gets people off social media, it'll be far better for all our young people. Like, there's just too much now reliance on social media. But again, it doesn't rock my boat anyway. Let them charge whatever they want. It's a profiteering thing anyway. But again, if it gets kids off social media, I think it's a very good thing.
Yeah, well, I've just looked. I've got 23,700 photographs on this. So, you know, perhaps I can't really talk.
You do a lot of pouting there, don't
you? I don't pout. And of those 23,000, I suspect about 10 are selfies, to be honest. And half of those were for sort of things like passport applications and boarding cards for ships and stuff. Declan, to yourself, in terms of social media, I'm sure as a councillor, as someone who's a public figure, you're going to have to use it. You're going to have to be present and be very active on it. But are we over-reliant on it?
Yeah, well, as you said there, Donald, like it's a very effective tool when it's used correctly, being able to communicate and connect with the electorate, with your constituents. I think it's a really important way of keeping people up to date. I'm active on a political way across Facebook, Instagram and TikTok, not on Snapchat. Are we too reliant on I suppose, the cloud for our memories? Yeah, I guess we are to a certain extent, but there's positives and negatives to that. The positives are, you know, everyone's phone usually throws up a memory, even from their own photos. Sometimes it's compiled into a video or whatever, and it might be something you've forgotten. I suppose that's the point. But it's quite nice sometimes to get those memories back up. Similar to you, I think tens of thousands of photos that I have on my phone. I'm sure, like most of them, as Leonard said, are of nothing or duplicates or whatever else. I think that, yeah, look, we're over-reliant on technology for absolutely everything. So it only stands to reason that also we're going to be over-reliant on it for memory. I think that, you know, Leonard also is correct in saying that anything that gets people off social media is probably a positive thing, particularly young people. I just don't think that this measure is going to have that effect. I think Snapchat is actually one of the primary ways that young people actually communicate with one another, more so even than phone or text. A colleague of mine was telling the story about, like, their child's friend coming over to the house, and like something about pickups and saying, what's their number, what's their phone number? And the child just looked at the parent and said, their phone number, what are you talking about? Like, that's not how they communicate. So Snapchat is, if Snapchat are monetizing it, that's only to be expected, and I don't think it'll have a huge effect on people leaving, because I think people are very, very dependent on it.
There's a comedian called Gary Gilman who said recently in a routine that he was asked about his phone, and he said, using the phone, you mean a phone call? He said, yeah, the phone, he said, is a very rarely used app on my phone, was the way he described a phone. I know if my own daughter was listening to this, she'd be going, four men of a certain age talking about something of which they know nothing. Brendan, can you enlighten the rest of us? Would you be a Snapchat user?
No, well, Leonard declared he's 50. Unfortunately, I've declared I'm 51. My daughter is all over Snapchat. I'm not. I use other social medias like X and Facebook. Yeah. But I think this is the reality of where we are. And I have to use the dreaded word, data centers. This is what data centers are for. And we're trying to bring in a national policy, no more data centres, Denmark likewise. But the reality is building data centres, maintaining data centres costs money. And we are, we are not, because we're the dinosaurs here. We're not like our daughters or sons. This is where the new generation is going. Everything is in the cloud. I don't know how these clouds function, but I know they're in a data centre anyway. But it's going to be the new norm. This is where it is. In our day, Donald, emails were the new buzzword, and you put them in a folder and there you are, and you had them on a hard drive. That's the black and white telly of our times now. Everything has moved on, but everything is going to be commercial, and anyone that thinks it's not going to be commercial is kind of fooling themselves, really. You know, but this is where the argument of data centres goes. We need more and more of them because this is the society that we have.
I have told the story before that when my daughter was heading in toward about sixth class in primary school, she would have been in around about 12. And she was asking for a mobile phone, and we were saying, no, you won't get a mobile phone at least until you're in secondary school. And she says, well, what age were you when you got your first mobile? And I said, 34. I want to raise a couple of other issues before we go. And it's been wonderful speaking to our panel, as it always is. And I'm going to go back to you, Brendan, in a few moments. I want to talk about fish, because I know there's been a lot of concern expressed this week about mackerel. I want to get your expert view on that. But before we do, I want to very briefly raise the presidential election and a lot of coverage over the past 2 days about Catherine Connolly and the fact that she hired an assistant who had a criminal record. Now, the assistant had done her time and served her sentence as a model prisoner, had left IRIGI, the prescribed organisation of which she had been a member, and she had I'm going to take that back. I'm not sure if IRIGI is prescribed, so please scratch that comment from the record. There's a lot of suggestion that maybe Catherine Connolly was showed bad judgment or did the wrong thing. Her argument is that no, this person was rehabilitated, had done their time, and I believe it's my responsibility to support someone who has been rehabilitated. Leonard, what would be your take on that?
Well, Joe, actually, I started reading about this yesterday. You know, when you heard the story first, you thought, you know, this was bad on her behalf, like, you know, it was a kind of big slip. But then I read Aimé O'Keefe's part, where actually he recommended this lady to Catherine Connolly, like. And you read all the stuff that she's actually doing now in the community, like she's teaching Irish, she's doing a lot of community work. She has left her past in the past, going by everything that Aimé O'Keefe had said, and the fact that he recommended it. And he was actually very annoyed that nobody actually rang him to ask him about it first before, you know, Micheál Martin then went public on it to condemn this. Listen, you know, at the end of the day, she served her sentence. She's changed her life around. There's a lot of people in the community, maybe through alcohol or drugs, that have turned their life around and are the better for it. And we have to give them a chance to move on with life. And, you know, at the end of the day, I was just looking to, Catherine Connolly was personally signing this lady in and out of the Dáil. She wasn't walking on her own. She wasn't, you know, she hadn't access to the whole place. So I think it's a nothing story. I think it's very sad in this lady. She's not part of the election. You know, she served her sentence. She's getting on with life. She's two young children. You know, it's sad that this had to be thrown out there now just for political scoring.
Declan?
Yeah, I agree with Leonard on that. I think that Catherine Connolly covered this extremely well and articulately when she was speaking to Claire Byrne yesterday on RTÉ Radio 1. And I think the points that she made about the whole point of a penal system is actually around rehabilitation and the excellent work the prison services do around that. Not always successfully, but certainly it seems in this case that it was successful in that this woman turned her life around and obviously stepped away from previous life that she had, got herself a PhD, etc. I mean, what is the point in a prison system and what is the point in fixed term sentences if it is not to rehabilitate people? I think also there is an awful lot of hypocrisy around this, Donal, as well. I think it is a storm in a teacup story. They're trying their best to dig up a bit of dirt on Catherine Connolly. It's proven quite difficult. I think that the hypocrisy also lies in the fact that there are actually TDs and senators who over the course of the past 100 years have served terms in the Dáil and Shannon who have convictions themselves for various offences. And I do feel sorry for this woman who has been caught up in this. She's not running for office herself. But I think Catherine Connolly has covered it extremely well. And I would agree with her completely that, you know, the point of this, the systems that we have is rehabilitation. And when that's successful, there's absolutely no reason why a person cannot be given a second chance.
Brendan, can I ask you to answer this one literally in one sentence and then speak briefly to us, and I mean for 1 minute, on the mackerel situation?
Yeah, well, in fairness, I worked in the Dáil. I think the key point here has been missed by the two previous speakers. I had to get Garda clearance to be in that building as an employee. That wasn't given in this case. There may be a reason why it wasn't given. I think that's the key issue that needs to be addressed by Catherine. If she does that, then it's fine. Employing someone that has a conviction, I have no difficulty in the wide world with that. But you have to conform with the rules of the Dáil, and everyone has to be vetted and Garda cleared to be an employee in that building.
And the situation regarding Mackerel?
The situation in regard to Mackerel is dire. The ICES advice that has been issued on Tuesday is providing for a 70% cut in Mackerel, 41% cut in Blue Whiting, 22% cut in Boarfish. Those are the three main stocks that would be processed in Killybegs along with other ports in Ireland. If this is the advice that will be adopted by Europe, it will lead to an economic Armageddon in northwest of Ireland and indeed in Castletown Bear. You're not talking about hundreds of jobs being lost. You're talking about thousands of jobs being lost. You're talking about multiple factory closures. The service sector upstream and downstream are in dire trouble if this happens. We are already an industry that's struggling because of a historical policy, the common fishery policy in Europe. We were trying to work our way through that. And this is a real hammer blow in terms of the scientific advice caused in the main by overfishing of Norway, Iceland and the Faroe Islands. This is going to be a massive issue. And unfortunately, because it's fishing, it will not get the national prominence that it should. If any other sector of the economy was given this by way of a policy directive on, based on science, by the actions of others, it would be all over the Dáil. Fishing isn't, even though fishing still employs 17,000 people. And in Donegal, 19% of the people of this county depend on fishing, either from a service sector or from actually working in the industry.
Brendan Byrne, Leonard Watson, Councillor Declan Meehan, thank you all very much indeed. That's our Friday panel. Time for a break. Kate is here with news after these.